Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
A very warm welcome to all of you for this series of talks on Lord Ram and his associates, specifically in relation to the theme of the Bhaktivedanta Manor for this year, which is living with gratitude and giving with compassion. So it is quite appropriate that our whole series of programs has started with a beautiful drama on Valmiki Muni and Narad Muni. Valmiki Muni, as we have just seen, is the author of the Ramayana. And this Ramayana of Valmiki is the original Ramayana. In fact, before Valmiki Muni, there was Ramkatha, of course, because Lord Ram's activities are eternally there. But Valmiki Muni put it in a certain format, and today we see it has 24,000 verses. So very exceptional way in which Valmiki's life was transformed. By the mercy of a pure devotee like Narad Muni, or his follower, anything is possible. There are numerous examples like the one that we just saw in the drama of how even most sinful people, even most fallen people have been transformed by the grace of a pure devotee into a great saint. There are cases like Mrigari. Mriga means a beast and Ari means the enemy. So Narad Muni is especially celebrated as the deliverer of many, many sinful people. He is also the spiritual master of many, many notable personalities in history. And we see that in the Srimad Bhagavatam and elsewhere as well. So Narad Muni happened to see Mrigari, who was a hunter. He was very cruel, and all he knew, because that's what he had seen, was that the animals had to be killed half, not fully killed. And they would be lying there thrashing about in pain till they ultimately passed away or they died, a very gruesome death. And this was what he would do. He would half kill the animals and leave them there, and then after they died, he would take them away. So Narad Muni was passing by and he saw this, and his heart was so filled with grief and agony to see this. He approached Mrigari and advised him in the same way or a similar way that here we saw Narad Muni advising Valmiki. And Mrigari was also transformed completely. And later, some time later, Narad Muni happened to be passing by the same place with another saint friend of his. And they saw that Mrigari was bending down on the floor and with his cloth was softly brushing away something. When they inquired, they learned that he was brushing away the ants, so that as he fell down on the floor to offer obeisances to the great saints, he would not kill those ants. And Parvat Muni, the associate of Narad Muni, was astonished. And he said, "This is an example of your extraordinary mercy, that a most sinful hunter like Mrigari has been transformed into such a saint that he doesn't even want to kill ants." So there are many examples like this, and Valmiki is one shining example of the power of devotional service and specifically of the power of great saintly personalities. Another lesson that we can learn from this story is about how transcendental understanding or spiritual knowledge or realization can be obtained, how scriptures come about. Ultimately, of course, it is all the word of God, it is about God, But the word of God and the pastimes of God and the messages of God are transmitted through self-realized, transparent via media, great saints like Valmiki. The process of revelation is very important in the spiritual realm. You see, in the material realm, we try to get knowledge by merely intellectual work, by academic study, by hard work, by research, by experimentation, and so on. All right, that is one way of getting knowledge. But ultimately, real knowledge from the spiritual realm, to which we have no access as ordinary conditioned souls in this world, can be obtained only when they are revealed to us by those people to whom it has been revealed by higher authorities. For example, Narad Muni again comes in the picture in relation to another of his disciples, the great celebrated compiler of the Vedas, Vyasadev. Having compiled many scriptures, the four Vedas, the Upanishads and so on, Vyasadeva was somewhat feeling restless. He had no peace internally. There was something missing. And Narad Muni came and gently reprimanded him and said, "You have written all these scriptures, but you haven't glorified the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. Therefore, you should now glorify Krishna." And that is how the great Srimad Bhagavatam happened to be compiled, by the mercy of Narad Muni. So Narad Muni was instrumental not only in the compiling of the Ramayana, but also of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then Vyasadev sat down in his ashram, Samyaprash, on the bank of the river, and he went into deep meditation. And in that inner chamber of his consciousness, he visualized everything. He saw the Supreme Lord. As Shukadev Goswami has said, bhakti yoge na manasi samyak vyavasito hisa samyak pranihte male purusham apashyam purushat purnam apashyat purusham purnam maya chatat apashrayam. So at that time, Vyasadeva situated himself in bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga na manasi samyak pranihite male. So after situating himself in devotional service, with his mind that was amala. Amala means that was without any contamination. So with that pure uncontaminated mind in devotional service, apashyat, he saw purusham purnam, the complete Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Lord was not alone. Maya chatat apashrayam. So the Lord was accompanied by Maya Devi, who was at a distance, because Maya is always at a distance from Krishna. She is a faithful servant of Krishna, but she remains aloof and discharges her responsibilities in her service to the Lord. So Vyasadeva was able to visualize this in his internal consciousness. And then gradually he compiled the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. Similarly, we see that Sanjaya, the disciple of Vyas, was reciting before Dhritarashtra, the father of the Kauravas, the events that were happening on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Sanjaya was present in the battlefield for some time, but afterwards he came back after the killing of the defeat of Bhishma. Not killing, Bhishma passed away much later. So he came back to Kurukshetra and then he was relating to Dhritarashtra the events that were going on. And he attributes this power to Vyasa Prasad. Prasad means mercy. So he was able to see this by the mercy of Vyasadeva, who empowered his disciple also to have the kind of vision he himself had. So we see this as a recurring theme. And not just in the Vedic tradition, but also in other traditions, we see that the word of God is generally revealed. And in this case, it was revealed to Valmiki Muni, who was previously a dacoit or a hunter or a thief, Ratnakar. So that's another lesson that we can learn from this story. It's interesting that Valmiki Muni, after his transformation, became such a pure devotee that he was specifically chosen by the creator of the universe, Brahma, to compose the Ramayana. Now, when he was sitting in his ashram on the bank of the river Tamasa, which is not too far from the Ganga, he suddenly saw Narad Muni come again. You see, because the spiritual master meets the disciples time to time. So just as he came to see Mrigari, he had also come to see Valmiki. And Valmiki saw Narad Muni, his guru, and he was very happy. And he asked him, "My dear sage, I am a little troubled." Just as Vyasadeva was a little troubled when Narad Muni approached him, so also was Vyasadeva a little restless, I should say, not troubled. And Narad Muni came there exactly at the right time. And he said, "I have a burning question in my mind. And that question is there anyone in this on this earth, a real person who is existing now, not someone who was there in history in the long bygone ages, but someone who's living now, who has all the super excellent qualities?" And then Valmiki Muni goes on to mention 16 qualities. Now, interestingly, 16, because it's, well, that's how Valmiki visualized it, but also we see that in the Vedic scriptures, in Sanskrit literature many times, the moon is also stated to have 16 qualities, because the moon is a symbol of beauty, and even though there are some black marks on the moon, but still it shines with its cooling rays and it's considered a symbol of beauty. And therefore, Lord Ram is Ramachandra, Krishna Chandra. So the Lord is also called as Chandra, the moon, because he's like the moon. He is endowed with these 16 perfect qualities. So Valmiki Muni wanted to know, is there any person who is endowed with these qualities? Now, these 16 qualities that Valmiki Muni is going to mention are actually the qualities that make anyone perfect by ordinary vision. Of course, ultimately perfection comes by pure devotion to the Supreme Lord. But even in an ordinary level of human culture and decency and evolved human civilization, there are certain things, there are certain qualities that must exist in a human being to be called a perfect human. So what are those 16 qualities? I'll just mention them briefly one by one. The first quality he asks is gunavan. Guna means quality, van means full of. So van is a suffix that comes many times to indicate that something is full of something. So gunavan means one who's full of or endowed with all sorts of sublime, auspicious qualities. Nowadays, unfortunately, people do not want to become gunavan. They want to become dhanavan. Dhan means wealth. So everybody is talking about money, money, money is honey. So therefore, if you have money, then you have all the good qualities. That is the material estimation of the modern day world. That a rich person has all the good qualities, you overlook everything else. And because he has money, people glorify him. As if he was actually endowed with all the good qualities, even though he may or may not have them. Of course, being wealthy is not necessarily a disqualification from having good qualities. Sometimes we do find wealthy people who have very good qualities. But the point is, that today people are more enamored of acquiring material possessions and wealth and so on, as opposed to having a set of qualities, of sublime qualities. Even parents raising their children try to raise them in such a way that they will be equipped to earn a lot of money and enjoy the material world. But real training, whether it's of children or whether it's of human beings and they grow up, it is to develop auspicious, sublime qualities. So gunavan, not just dhanavan. The second quality, he says, is viryavan. Virya means very brave prowess, one who is full of prowess, very powerful. So is there someone who is endowed with auspicious qualities and also with a great deal of prowess? The third quality, he says, is dharmagya. Dharmagya means one who knows dharma. One who not just knows theoretically, intellectually, but one who actually follows. So one who knows dharma, the intricacies of dharma, because dharma is very intricate, very hard to understand how dharma acts and what principles of dharma should act in which situation. It is a very bewildering area. So dharmagya is one who understands all the different aspects of dharma in all their complexity and intricacy, and at the same time one who also follows them, who obeys them. So this is a dharmagya. So is there anyone who's also simultaneously a dharmagya? And the fourth quality, he says, is kritagya. Kritagya means grateful. And that is our topic for today, gratitude. So we see that gratitude is one of the important 16 qualities that make up a perfect human being. If one doesn't have gratitude, then one is imperfect to that degree. We'll talk a little more about gratitude as once we finish the description of these 16 qualities. And especially about Ram, it is said, he never forgot even the slightest help that was given to him by anybody. He remembered it for years and years and years. He would never forget it. This is the sign of gratitude. I've mentioned this earlier a couple of times in my visits earlier, that there are, a great saint once said, that there are two things we should always remember and two things we should always forget. The two things we should always remember are the bad that we have done to others and the good that others have done to us. And there are two things we should always forget: the good that we have done to others and the bad that others have done to us. Is it too complicated? Okay, so let's see. Can anyone say it verbatim? Which are the two things to always remember? Please raise your hand. Yes. The good that others have done to us. The bad that we have done to others. So we should always remember that. Yes? So we should always remember the bad that we have done to others and the good that others have done to us. And what are the two things that we should always forget? We should forget the good that we have done to others and the bad that others have done to us. Excellent. Very nice. But isn't it a familiar story that what we see in the world is exactly the opposite? Perhaps even with ourselves we have some experience of that. We tend to not let somebody forget the good we have done to them. We remind them, we find occasions and excuses to remind them or drop hints And if the person is not sharp enough, then we have to say it in plain words. And we don't forget any harm that is done to us by others for years and years, maybe 20 years later, we still remember, you said this to me on such and such date and such time. So therefore, Lord Ram's character was perfect. Of course, I'm jumping ahead because we haven't come to Ram yet. So this is the perfect character. A perfect human being is one who never forgets the good that others do to him or to her. It is just civilized human conduct. The next is Satyavakyo. He used to always speak the truth. And he would speak it always pleasingly. As I was mentioning on Sunday, that not only was Ram Satyavakya, his vakya, his speech was always satyam, it was truth, but he was also mridubhashi, he was soft-spoken, he was madhurabhashi, he spoke sweetly, softly, sweetly, and he was purvabhashi. He would speak first. He wouldn't necessarily wait till the others spoke. He would go out of his way to meet people and greet people and talk to people because others may have been uncomfortable. Oh, he's the king. How can I go and talk to him? So he would make them comfortable and go and talk to them. And he would never raise his voice, even if somebody raised his voice with him. So these are some of his qualities. Apart from Satyavakya, these are the other qualities associated with Lord Ram's speech. Next, sixth was Dridavrataha, which means a perfect human being must be firm in his or her vows, must be determined, especially when it comes to vows, not especially only, when it comes to vows that are for one's true welfare. Not all sorts of vows that will cause harm to us and to others. The next one, number seven, Charitrena Chako Yuktaha, who is endowed, Kokaha means who is Yukta means endowed. So who is the one who is endowed with superb character, Charitrena? See, character is such an important thing, right? You know, there is an English proverb, I'm sure you've all heard it from childhood, that if money is lost, nothing is lost. If health is lost, something is lost. If character is lost, everything is lost. But nowadays the formula is reversed, right? If money is lost, everything is lost. So character development is one of the very important parts of education and of human civilization. Our universities and schools are meant to be coming out with students of utmost character, noble character, but that's hardly the case that we see. So society is full of people who lack in character and virtue. The next one, number eight, Sarvabhuteshu ko hitaha. So who is that person who is hitaha, who is a well-wisher of all living entities, Sarvabhuteshu? So someone who is very kind to all, who is a genuine well-wisher of everyone. So this is compassion, which is the second quality of our theme for this year in the Bhaktivedanta manner. The first is gratitude, the second is compassion. So Lord Ram has both these. Any perfect human being should have both these. And we are not perfect human beings, but we aspire to be perfect. Therefore we should also aspire to cultivate these qualities. Sarvabhuteshu ko hitaha means that a human being is not petty-minded, does not discriminate on parochial grounds as to who he or she should be kind to. Oh, this person is not from my family, so I can't be kind to that person. Oh, this person is not from my community, doesn't speak my language, is not from my country. Or in any case, I don't like him, so I won't be kind to him, or I won't be the well-wisher for that person. No. What to speak of human beings, even animals, sarva bhuteshu. Bhuta means living entities. It's not that one should be kind and compassionate only to humans and then be cruel to animals. And sometimes we see the other way around. People are vegetarians, they don't kill animals, but they are very cruel to humans in the way they talk and they deal with people. Yes? So, sarva bhuteshu ko hitaha. So, these two qualities are being grateful and being compassionate. They're part of the 16 qualities that Valmiki wants to know about. Number 9, Vidwan is one who is very knowledgeable, who is full of vidya. Vid and van. Vid means to know. So one who is full of knowledge, Vidwan. Samarthaha, that's the next quality. Samartha means one who is capable, who can do, who is able to do things, who is very resourceful. You know, if you want to get something done, something very big, and you say, oh, this person is samartha, he is capable. This person is resourceful. He or she can do it. Number 11. Eka priya darshanaha. He alone is very pleasing to look at. That means even in terms of looks, the ideal human being should be very pleasing to look at. Very good looking. That's another characteristic of a perfect human being. But of course not the most important one. There are many good-looking people who don't have any of the other characteristics. And there are some people who may not be so good-looking from an external point of view, but internally they are beautiful because they have all the other 15 qualities. But anyway, Valmiki is curious to know about someone who may have all these 16 in perfection. And the next one is Atmavan, one who is self-controlled, very important. 13, Jita Krodho, one who has won over or conquered or mastered Krodha, which means anger. Dyutiman, one who is endowed with duty, splendor. 15, Anasuyakaha, Asuya means envy. As we see from Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada explains that in the 9th chapter. Anasuyakaha means one who is not envious of anybody, who bears no malice or rancor towards anybody. This is the characteristic of a genuine human being. He doesn't bear malice. He's not jealous of people. He doesn't hold grudges against anyone. Even if that person has harmed him, he doesn't hold a grudge and remember it. He doesn't want to wreak revenge or something like that. He remains peaceful at heart. And finally, number 16, Bibhyati Devaha cha jata roshasya sanyuge. Bibhyati Devaha, that means Devaha, all the demigods, Bibhyati, they are afraid. Of whom? Of this person, the perfect person, cha jata roshasya sanyuge, who becomes angry in battle. I want to know, O Narad Muni, Valmiki says, that person, that ideal human being, who, when he gets angry, when provoked in the battlefield, puts fear in the hearts of even the demigods. So this is the 16th quality. Okay, we may not have it here. We can't put fear in the hearts of demigods. But these are the qualities that Valmiki wants to know. Is there such a person living today who has these qualities? So very interesting. And by the way, qualities 13 and 16 may seem to be contradictory, because 13 says Jita Krodho, one who has conquered anger, and 16 says one who is provoked in anger and puts fear into the hearts of the demigods. So in one place they say he's conquered anger, the other place says when he's angry. So what does one mean? So the implication is naturally that anger can be utilized as a tool. We should not become tools in the hands of anger. generally when we get angry, we lose control of ourselves and we don't know what we are doing or what we are saying, and we end up usually repenting for what we have said or done. But one who is jita krodha is very controlled, can utilize anger effectively for the right purpose. So this is the difference. So therefore there is no such contradiction here. So Narad Muni has spoken about, or he asks him about these qualities, and Narad Muni says, yes, there is such a person. And that person is called Rama. He is the son of Maharaj Dasharath, who is the king of the planet. And he lives at Ayodhya. His kingdom is called Kosala. Of course, even though his kingdom directly was Kosala, but other kings in other parts were subordinate to him. They offered their taxes to him and so on. And that is how a king, even though he had a kingdom, could still be called the emperor of the entire world. So Narad Muni gives the answer to Valmiki Muni. Valmiki Muni is of course very pleased to hear this. Now, coming to these qualities, gratitude and compassion. Gratitude is, even in the Ramayana, actually in the Sundarkanda, it is said, kritecha prati kartavyam esham dharma sanatanaha. Repaying one good deed with another is a very important part of Sanatana Dharma, of eternal morality. So if someone does something good to us, we must always try to repay that with another good deed. So this is an important part of human life. We should not be ungrateful. Ingratitude can be a great burden on Mother Earth and on human society. Even animals are grateful. Yes, you have seen that. Dogs, cats, lions, elephants, so many, even animals, birds, they have this quality of gratitude. If you help an animal in distress, that animal will usually not forget. And there are these clips going on, video clips which you see, of even lions and tigers not forgetting the good that some human did to them. The human probably rescued them when they were cubs and looked after them, rescued them from death and nursed them back to good health and then led them out in the forest. And when they met them after some time, they actually came and embraced the human being. So there are many stories like this, even with dangerous animals like lions and tigers. So what to speak of, you know, other domesticated animals like cats and dogs. So even animals have this quality. Sometimes humans don't. So who's better? Therefore, ingratitude is considered a very big burden. Mother Earth is not able to tolerate two kinds of people. One who tells lies and one who is ungrateful. So ingratitude is something that cannot be tolerated. And a person loses all good qualities by becoming ungrateful. And when one becomes grateful, one gets all the other qualities. Because one revives one's superior human quality, one's superior human nature. One becomes actually civilized when one learns to be grateful for what one receives. And who should be grateful? Is there anyone who is exempt from this? No one. No single living entity can afford to be ungrateful. Why so? Because every one of us is always receiving something helpful, beneficial, good from somebody else. We cannot exist, we cannot survive without receiving help from others. We are constantly dependent on others. We are never independent. Even on bacteria, on germs, we have good bacteria in the stomach, in our digestive tract to help us with digestion. So we are dependent even on the bacteria. And when you take some antibiotics, you have to take all these probiotics and all that to restore the good bacteria. Yes? So we are dependent on more living entities than we can imagine. The birds, the insects, the bacteria, what to speak of other human beings. In every process of nature, there are numerous types of living entities involved. And we are benefiting from their contributions to our life. The trees give out oxygen. They take in carbon dioxide. We breathe out carbon dioxide, we breathe in oxygen. So the trees are like our friends. So we are dependent on them. We get so many things from them, from the rivers, from the oceans, from the mountains, from the land, from the soil, the sun, the moon, there's no limit. So nobody can afford to be ungrateful. Everything we have, including our body, and everything that is required to sustain our body and mind, is given to us by somebody, is a result of somebody's contribution. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada, in one purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam, says that any human being, he's not just talking about a devotee. Generally, he mentions elsewhere in the Bhagavatam that gratitude is specifically a quality that is associated with Brahmanas and Vaishnavas and devotees of the Lord. But then he also mentions that every human being must be grateful, because everything that is required for sustenance is being provided by the Lord. And therefore one must be, even anyone who has any trace of culture or civilized behavior must be grateful to God for everything that's been given. We cannot survive without the gifts of God. So gratitude is something that is really very integral to our very existence, to our very survival. It's not just some rare quality that we should be grateful when someone loans us money when we were in need of it, or someone heals us when we were very sick, or rescues us when we were in danger. Of course, one should be grateful for people who help us in such situations. But what about the everyday little things of life which we don't pay attention to? Even the fact that we can breathe, we have to be grateful for that. And those who have severe asthma understand what it means, the value of one breath. Yes? So gratitude is not something that is done only for some very major event that happens in our life. It is something that we have to be conscious of at every moment of our life. It has to become our second nature. And this quality of gratitude reaches its perfection in a pure devotee. Because the pure devotee is grateful not merely for the fact that Krishna, the Supreme Lord, is providing everything for the maintenance of his body, but even more so, the pure devotee is grateful to the Lord that he has brought him to his lotus feet and relieved him from the burning, blazing fire of material existence. Generally, people who are not so well versed with or not acquainted with the principles of devotional service become grateful to God when he bestows them material favors. Oh, God is very kind, he enabled this, I got so much money. Oh, God is very kind, I got free from this disease. God is very kind, I had this benefit or that benefit. So people who are somewhat materialistically inclined, they believe in God, they are worshipping God, but they have a materialistic bent in their worshipping tendency. They think of God's mercy in material terms. Because God provides them material things and protects their material life, so they are very grateful to God for that. So at least they are grateful, that's good. But they are perhaps not so much at a higher, they're not aware of the higher conception of gratitude. A normal materialistic worshipper is grateful to God when he gives him money, but a pure devotee will be grateful to God even if God takes away his money. An ordinary person will be grateful to God when he gives him good health. A pure devotee may be grateful to God even if God takes away his good health. Just the last several weeks, I have been in touch with one young boy, 21 years old, handsome, well-built, studying engineering in India, and he got cancer one fine day. He was not really a devotee. His mother is an Ayurvedic doctor. She was a devotee. And he wasn't really keen. He would argue. But then he got cancer. Such pain that it was very hard to see him. And this went on for a year. They tried every possible therapy, but he was simply going down and down. And then I was in touch with him to some degree, and especially in the last few days I was regularly in touch, and the cancer spread, and he had difficulty even breathing. And as time passed, his mother told me one time that he has never cried. He never cried despite everything that happened. And he was the one who was giving them solace and telling them, don't be afraid. So he was very courageous, very brave, and then he became a devotee. And he started chanting, and his only questions in the last few days were, how can I remember Krishna even in the midst of my pain? Or he was unable to breathe in the last few days. So I'm not even able to breathe. How can I remember Krishna? I must confess I forget. How can I remember Krishna in this condition? He wasn't saying, why has Krishna done this to me? And by the way, just day before yesterday, I got a message that he had passed away. I just talked to him the night before and the day before and the day before and every day. And then I got the message he had passed away. But not a tinge of regret. He never asked me even once, why has God done this to me? All he used to be concerned about is, when he understood the philosophy, how can I remember Krishna and ensure that I don't forget him when I'm going through this bodily difficulty? Here is something, a 21-year-old boy who is a new devotee, just look at his consciousness. He wasn't complaining. A grateful person never complains. But look at it, his life became perfect because he got Krishna consciousness. The price he had to pay, somehow by the Lord's arrangement, was that he had to lose his body. But he got this eternal gift of Krishna consciousness. And he remained grateful for that. So therefore, gratitude is something that is found in a devotee naturally. So whether the Lord gives us wealth or takes away wealth, whether he gives us health, takes away the health, whether he gives us prestige and position and name and fame, or whether he takes it all away from us, the devotee is always grateful in all circumstances. Because the devotee sees the loving hand of Krishna, the Supreme Lord, behind all this. Very interesting. So Prabhupada, in another purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam, says, the devotee feels himself or herself so inadequate in the face of the unlimited and causeless mercy of the Lord that he's at a loss to repay that debt. He's helpless. He just can't do enough to discharge this debt of gratitude, of love. So Prabhupada says all he does is simply fold his hands with love and gratitude in front of the Lord. So as the devotees advance in Krishna consciousness, they become more and more acutely aware of how much more they should be grateful to the Supreme Lord. And gratitude and devotion go very well together. They are necessary companions. You cannot have devotion to the Lord unless you are grateful to the Lord. So a devotee becomes automatically grateful and increasingly so. The more he or she realizes the gifts that the Supreme Lord is giving, the gift of pure love, the gift of Krishna Prem, such a treasure that is so priceless, and we are getting that just for some little difficulty of this one body in this one lifetime. And when one receives something that is truly priceless, invaluable, then automatically one wants to share it. And that brings us to the second quality, compassion. So when you have gratitude in your devotion to the Lord, automatically you will feel kindness to, you will feel kind towards other people. You will share in their sorrow and suffering, and you will also have the knowledge to understand what real compassion is. Compassion is not only on the bodily platform. There are different levels and grades of compassion. One level of compassion is on the platform of the body, which is necessary, yes. We need to be kind to somebody whose body is suffering, yes. Because we are devotees, we can't say you're not the body, Prabhu, and move on. Yes, we have to be understanding and kind to the body, even if somebody is suffering in mind. Yes, we should be very sensitive. But there is also misplaced compassion. Let's say there's someone who gives another person money, you know, go ahead and take, buy a drink. You know, I'm giving, it's on me. It's my, you're feeling kind, giving a homeless person some money to go and buy some alcohol. Misplaced compassion. So there is misplaced compassion, then there is compassion on the level of the body, there is compassion on the level of the mind, and finally there's compassion on the level of the soul. And that requires transcendental knowledge. So the devotee, by the grace of the Lord, is equipped with transcendental knowledge by which he or she can give transcendental compassion to people at large. So that includes the body and the mind as well. But ultimately, the devotee understands that real compassion means to bring somebody to Krishna consciousness, to make them forget material consciousness and come to the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. And this is the permanent solution, the ultimate benefit that can be given to anybody. This is real compassion. If, however, in the course of telling other people about Krishna consciousness, we have a feeling of superiority and we think, I am better than this person, or there is a bit of ego in us that tells us, look, this person is ignorant, I have this knowledge, and I am better, and I am telling this person from a higher platform, then that compassion is also a lower quality of compassion. When the compassion comes from a feeling of gratitude and devotion which causes humility, then that compassion is genuine. It is real compassion. So this is the connection between gratitude and compassion. So of course it's a long topic, but we have to still move on with Narad Muni and Valmiki Muni. So we see both these qualities, Kritagya, being grateful, and Sarvabhuteshu Ko Ahitaha, one who is very kind and compassionate and ever well-wisher of everyone. These two qualities are part of the 16 qualities that Valmiki Muni wants to know about. And Narad Muni points out that Ram, the son of Dasharatha Maharaj, is that one perfect person. He is Maryada Purushottam, right? We call him that. And then Narad Muni goes on to describe many more qualities of Ram in addition to these 16. He repeats some of these 16 and he adds many more glorious qualities of Lord Ram. And then he summarizes the entire Ramayana in about 80 verses. This is the very first chapter of Valmiki's Ramayana. which has about 100 verses, I think. So this 100 verses, or especially the latter 80 verses, are called the Sankshipta Ramayana, or the summarized Ramayana. The whole summary of the Ramayana is given by Narad Muni here. And it's interesting that Narad Muni is speaking in the past tense up to a point. Till such time as Lord Ram has returned from Lanka after killing Ravana and taken charge of the kingdom, he speaks in the past tense. And thereafter, he speaks in the future tense. Meaning that this discussion between Valmiki Muni and Narad Muni happened during Lord Ram's presence on this planet, on his manifest presence. That means that when Valmiki actually started composing the Ramayana, in his mind, of course, there was no need for paper and pen in those days. The great sage just composed it in his mind, and he had it in his mind, that's all. So, at that time, Lord Ram was ruling, he had come back. So, many things were events, were those that had already happened, and there were many more events that were yet to happen. So, roughly 41 to 42 years, or maybe a few more perhaps, years, yeah, because by then actually Love and Kush were there, and Sita was in Valmiki's ashram. So, maybe a few years more than that. So those were in past tense. So then he described that. And what was to come, his 11,000 years as a great king and the reign of Lord Ram, Ram Rajya, the perfect reign that was described here. So in any case, as Narad Muni finished his description of the Ramayana, then he left. And Valmiki Muni was very grateful. And then he sat down there and he told his disciple Bharadwaj, I want to go to the river Tamasa and take a bath. So Bharadwaj very faithfully accompanied him with the paraphernalia that was required. And they went there, and the forest was so beautiful. There were birds and nice trees and flowers. Very, very beautiful sight to behold. So Valmiki Rishi moved around in the forest, admiring the beauty of the forest, and he saw two cranes, two birds. In Sanskrit, they're called krauncha. Valmiki Ramayana is called krauncha birds, cranes. And they were cooing very melodiously and sporting with each other. And he was very captivated by this beautiful sight, seeing these two birds in play and singing so melodiously. And just at that moment, something happened. A hunter came nearby and he shot an arrow that pierced the male bird, who then fell down dead with blood oozing from his body. And the female bird, who was his companion, was then grief-stricken, and she was there crying, and she fell dead in grief on the floor. Now this happened right in front of Valmiki's eyes. He was shell-shocked. What on earth happened? This was like Satyuga, such a serene, beautiful atmosphere, and all of a sudden this wretched hunter comes along and he kills these two beautiful birds. And they have fallen down dead in front of my very eyes. So he becomes very angry. And there is some emotion that swells up within his heart. And he's unable to bear that anger. And it suddenly bursts forth from his mouth in the form of a verse. He suddenly pronounces that. Ma nishat pratishtham. Tvagamaha Shashvati Samaha Yat Krauncha Mithuna Dekam Avadhi Kama Mohitam. O Nishad, O you cruel hunter, may you never get prosperity or happiness or peace for endless years. because you have killed these two birds being engaged in passion. So therefore, this was a curse. Now generally, saintly people don't curse like that in anger. Now generally, saintly people are in control of their anger. So even when we see Narad Muni cursing, for example, he cursed Nalakuvar, Manigriva, who were behaving most inappropriately in front of him. He cursed them, but he didn't get angry. He didn't lose control of himself. But here, something happened to Valmiki, and this thing just came out of his mouth. And even he was puzzled. What happened to me? How come I lost control of myself? And what is it that I spoke? Even he could not understand the words that he uttered, that somehow came out of his mouth, as if by some magic. And then he spoke the verse and he repented. How did I get angry like this? How did I curse this hunter like this? Everybody in this world is bound by the three modes of nature. We all have our own nature. So the fowler or the hunter had his own nature. He is acting according to that. The world is going on. Why did I become so upset? So he was very disturbed with this. And as he was reflecting on this, he spoke to his disciple Bharadwaj and he said, Shokartasya pravritto me shloko bhavatu nanyatha. Shokartasya, artha means to be afflicted by some misery, or shoka means grief. So being afflicted by shoka means grief. What happened? Shloko bhavati na anyatha. From shoka or grief came shloka. Shloka, you all know, verse. Sanskrit verse is called a shloka. So apparently, now this appears, that this is the first time that the word shloka came up. And Valmiki was wondered, how come this poetry came out of my mouth? And he began to analyze the verse that came out of his mouth. The shloka that came out from his shoka, the poetry that came out, the verse that came out from his grief. He says, look, Bharadwaj, it's perfectly arranged, perfect meter, perfect four quarters of this verse. It can be so perfectly put into rhythm. It can be set to rhythm. It is perfectly fit for being music, for music to be composed for this verse. So in every respect, this verse, this spontaneous outburst of a verse was just perfect. And he could not understand how this happened. So he was thinking and thinking and thinking about it, and just at that time, who but the creator of the world, Brahma, descended from his swan carrier. And Valmiki was surprised. He was completely astonished. All of a sudden, Brahma comes down here. Let's say, for example, sitting here in this room, all of a sudden the Queen of England were to walk in here. We'd be surprised. Oh. So Brahma came all of a sudden. And Valmiki Muni was taken by surprise. He stood up, bent low, washed the lotus feet of Brahma, gave him a seat of honor. And the disciples were all struck with wonder. Oh, our guru is so important. The creator of the universe has come to see him in the ashram. And then, even as he was attending to Brahma, his mind was still contemplating the verse and what it was that made him curse, to lose his temper, and how come this verse is so perfect in every respect. So he was still thinking about that, even sitting face to face with Brahma. So Brahma understood. He said, my dear sage, do not worry. I know you are very perplexed about what happened to you just now, but know for certain that these words were not your doing. It is I who spoke through your mouth. It is I who prompted these words to emerge from your mouth. It is I who arranged for you to become angry and curse this hunter. The verse that you have composed is a perfect meter in which the pastimes of Lord Ram can be described. So please compose this great narration of the history and pastimes of Lord Ram. Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nand ki jai. Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai. And for those of you who were there on Sunday, I mentioned that Brahmaji was smiling and he said to Valmiki Muni, rest assured that you will understand, you will know everything that has happened in relation to Lord Ram and everything that will happen now in the future. Nothing will be unknown to you. Whether the pastimes of Lord Ram are known or unknown, they will be known to you. And nothing that you say or write will be false. Everything you speak, everything you compose will be the truth. And till such time as the mountains and the seas exist, your composition of the Ramayana will exist in all its glory. And you will live here, so long as the Ramayana is here, you will be not only here on earth, but you will also be with me. And then Brahma blessed Vyasadev and departed. And all the disciples of Vyasadeva were looking on, stunned at what had happened. The Creator had come and given a mission to their Guru to compile the Ramayana. And with Brahma's blessings, Valmiki Muni sat down in meditation, and then everything was revealed. Revealed knowledge. Everything came up. He could visualize the entire Ramayana as if it was happening right in front of his eyes. It was, but in front of his inner eye, not the outer eye. And that is how this Ramayana was then composed. So tomorrow we'll have some further discussion. But I heard in the evening that the drama that the devotees were going to present was on Valmiki and Narad Muni, Ratnakar and Valmiki. So then I immediately changed the topic and said, let me also speak and extend what they have said. Okay, so thank you very much for the nice drama, and you gave me a good idea to speak on as well. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments?
Yes.
Thank you very much for the wonderful class. Maharaj, on Sunday you mentioned that Lord Ram had ruled over the kingdom for 11,000 years. We also read in Bhagavatam that it is mentioned after Mother Sita's departure to the spiritual abode, Lord Ram engaged in a sacrifice which went up to 13,000 or 14,000 years. So is it after the kingdom that the further 13 or 14,000 years that Lord Ram was engaged in that sacrifice?
No, not 13,000, because Valmiki is very clear in the first chapter of the Ramayana itself that Lord Ram ruled for 11,000 years. That's very clear. And then he departed for the spiritual world right after that. So there is no mention of 13,000 years there. So it is only 11,000, of which, as I mentioned on Sunday, Lord Ram was how old when he went to the forest in exile? 27. How many years was he in exile? 14. So how old was he when he returned? Roughly 41, 42 perhaps. And then he ruled for 11,000 years. So 11,000 years, this figure is clearly mentioned by Valmiki Muni in the very first chapter. Yes, one question here.
Thank you for the wonderful discourse. Maharaj, I was listening to your Hampi class, and when you were giving the talk on Dhamma and different places, you were mentioning about khandas, different khandas. And this was a very small, maybe stupid question that came to my mind. Some speakers, devotees, refer to this as Khanda, but quite a lot of them also refer to it as Khanda, Sundar Khanda.
You know, it's not Khanda, it's Khanda.
It's Khanda.
Khanda. Khanda. Like Balakanda, the first Khanda is Balakanda. Ayodhya Khanda, like that. Aranya Khanda. So there are six Khandas. Khanda means a section. Yeah? Okay, yes, okay. Yeah. Okay. We'll come to you.
Thank you, Maharaj. The eighth quality that you mentioned about Sarvabhuteshu Kohitam. It's a very common question which is asked that Ram had the choice to make between right and right when he asked Sita to go to Valmiki's ashram and exile her. Now, was that in her hita to be asked to leave? How would that work in this quality?
Of course, this is one of those episodes which are always in the eyes of people who read the Ramayana. But of course, because he is an ideal king, so he had a higher purpose. And as far as Sita Devi was concerned, yes, there was always a higher purpose to everything the Lord does. Love and Kush had to be born away from Lord Ram in Valmiki Muni's ashram. They were to be taught the Ramayana. Actually, after Valmiki Muni compiled the Rama, composed it, it was all in his head. He was looking for someone appropriate to teach it to, someone who was so qualified that they would just remember the entire 24,000 verses just by hearing it, and not just remembering it rote, but also reproducing it with the right musical intonations and the modulations of voice, sweet recitation of the verse, proper pronunciation. And then he saw Love and Kush, the two sons of Sita. And then he thought, these are perfect students. And he taught the Ramayana to them. And then they went around reciting Ramayana everywhere. And even Lord Ram, because they had become quite popular in Ayodhya. And then Lord Ram invited them to his court. And he heard his own story from these two boys, without knowing that they were his sons. And he became so captivated by his own narration as told by Love and Kush, that he was rapt, in rapt attention, and he was moving from his throne, then he slipped down, sat down on the floor, kept moving. So if the Lord himself is so attracted to his pastimes, then we should be even more attracted. So there are so many purposes for reasons for the Lord doing so many things, but this he was demonstrating his duty as a king, that a king, for him the praja or the citizens are first. That was his prime motive. Okay, yes, I'll repeat your question, you can say it.
Elaborate more on the dharma, the quality that it is
dharmagya. Okay, so your question is about the quality of Ram that was mentioned, dharmagya, one who knows dharma. Yes, dharma is dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. So dharma is that which is spoken and enunciated by the Supreme Lord. You and I cannot make dharma. The Supreme Lord and his empowered representatives will present to us what dharma is. So understanding these subtle and intricate laws of that which upholds the universe, that's dharma, dhri. Dhri comes from to uphold. So dharma is that which upholds the entire creation. So when we follow dharma, then we uphold the whole creation, so to speak, the qualitative aspect of the creation. So it is not easy to understand the subtler aspects of dharma. Srila Prabhupada has, however, made things very simple for us. We may not be able to understand it in all its complexity, but at least the basic principles that are feasible for us in this day and age, he has told us, so we should try to follow that. Okay, so we'll stop here.
Fine.
All right, so Shri Shri Radha Gokula Ananda ki jai, Shri Shri Jagannath, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai, Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Gaur Prema Anande Hare Bo, Hare Krishna.